the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 90, recorded Friday, May 10th, 2013. Is four good better than two good?
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I'll be your host for the day. Thank you so very much for joining us. With us this week is Brad Grimes, the senior editor and writer from Infocom. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Brock McGinnis, sales manager at Westbury National Show Systems. Welcome, Mr. McGinnis.
Nice to be back, Tim.
Also with us is Joe Andrulis. I try to say both names at the same time there. He's Vice President of Global Marketing for AMX. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thanks. Nice to be here.
And last but not least, Stephen McKay from IAVI. He is the Vice President of Sales. Welcome, Stephen.
G'day, Tim. Great to be back. Thank you.
Good day. I like having Stephen on because, you know, he says good day. this week, we're going to talk about control. Actually, we have a couple different control company stories, which is kind of nice because we have AMX on. Also talk about 4K and a possible inroads, maybe. First, we're going to talk about TIO. It's called Turn It On. It's a new company formed by Mike Anderson. And here's the thing. The niche, I guess, that TIO has is the fact that they run exclusively on AMX devices. Brock, we're going to kick it off with you. You're the closest that the industry has to the end user. Not you're the end user, but you are the closest person to the end user. Is this something how do I put this? I don't know these guys. I'm not passing judgment on them. But was this a solution to an existing problem, or do you think that they just said, hey, you know, let's go down the Android path here?
I suspect it's probably the latter, that there's been a whole bunch of development lately for iOS devices because of the plethora of devices out there that people want to use. I haven't seen the platform. I understand they're going to be at Infocom next month. It will certainly be an interesting alternative, although when it says turn it on home, it isn't really of primary interest to a commercial integrator such as ourselves. We would rather use platforms that are specifically designed, more robust commercial kind of product.
Brock mentioned the fact that they're going to be at Infocom next month. Is this
shameless plug?
No, it's a good plug. It's a really good plug.
By Brock for us. We appreciate that.
and actually, 1 month from, we're recording this on the 10th, 1 month from right now, those of us who have to do anything on Super Tuesday should be in Orlando. So, you know. But it is you guys have seen, at least I have seen, and I'm sure you have more than I have, the last few years, a number of control systems, and they've all kind of started out in the home. Is this kind of where you're seeing where a few years ago it was like video and everybody was doing video, and now it seems to me at least that everybody's doing control?
Well, it's certainly interesting, and everyone's looking for applications that people can run on these handheld devices that they've got, and control is just one of them. I mean, everyone's trying to do control, from the service providers to the niche manufacturers to startups are trying to, and I would say they're trying to find the secret formula, because I don't see a huge uptick for it yet. I mean, even in my house, I can't control anything from an Android yet. I would probably like to, but I just haven't found a tool that I necessarily feel comfortable with or I can operate great. This company in particular, Brock's right. It's interesting that they're coming to Infocom because they'll quickly realize, and I'm sure they already have, that Infocom's is very heavy on the commercial side, not the home automation side. But, you know, I'm looking at this company because I knew Colorado VNet way before Rust Sound and all these other things happened to it, and they have a lot of good technology, and they have for a long time. And it sounds like some of that technology is going to migrate into some of these products somehow. So I'll be interested to see what they've developed, you know, how much power is in it, how much customization you can do. You know, it's good to have on the radar. It was difficult to see Colorado VNet go through the issues that they had. But if they can put that technology into a product that people will adopt, yeah, I think it'd be great.
Joe, there's the old adage that, you know, competition is good for innovation. Is that the same with you guys with AMX? I mean, these guys would be a direct competitor to you guys when it comes to the home part of AMX.
Possibly. You know, it's probably a little too early to say just what part of the market they're going to be targeting. There's been a big interest in doing home control kind of on the low end, and using sort of off-the-shelf devices. And I think that there's a real interested market if we can find the right formula. I think the other speakers brought it out well. It is a matter of finding something that's not just solves the problem, but does it in a real easy way for the user. You know, AMX has always participated in the home market in a very small subsection of it at the very high end. So can't really say for sure whether this is going to affect us in any meaningful way or not. What we do in the home really goes well beyond just the control aspect and includes a lot of the media management. Yeah. And I'm not sure if this tries to take that on as well.
That's a very good point, because you AMX, as well as a number of other companies, have moved into other areas, like, you know, putting HD video over twisted pair and fiber and such. So, Stephen, you guys are distributors, and so you are between Joe and Brock here. Uh-huh. When it comes to introducing new products, how do you do that? I mean, when it comes to, hey, there's a new company, and let's say that came to IAVI and said, hey, we'd like you to rep our stuff or distribute our stuff. How would you go about introducing this to Brock?
Well, it's actually very difficult to introduce new products these days, Tim. We've found that a lot of the integrators are very, you know, very set in the products that they use. You know, whether if they like AMX, you know, they stay with AMX. And you know, AMX also have, you know, are producing a lot of different products to cover the integrators, and they're making, I think, even, you know, simpler products now for programming and all that sort of good stuff. So when a new product comes along, they're already well invested in AMX, or, you know, whichever control system they're using. They've had their people trained, they understand the product. So to turn around and say, oh, we've got this great new product, untested, untried, it's very difficult for them to introduce it to some of their customers that they've maybe had for years, and they're, you know, they're refreshing that customer's control system, boardroom, whatever the case may be. So we've found that it is getting more and more difficult to introduce new product. The only way we could go about it is by advertising it, calling customers about it, and organizing demos of the product. That's about the only general way we can go about it, but it's pretty tough.
So basically, you're not spoon feeding them, but you're saying, hey, here's something if you need it. You're not, you know, kind of hard selling them on it, I guess.
Right, because the thing is, our people have to be trained too. We've got to have somebody at least at a level one tech to be able to understand the product, to talk to the customer about it. Because if we're going to represent it, they don't want us. They don't want to be taking all the calls all the time. They want to know that, you know, we can handle it. So that's just one more thing we've got to learn, one more thing my people have to know, and is there going to be a return on that? And do they want us to stock the equipment as well? That's another thing. So there's more product that we have to warehouse. So there's many factors go into launching in it, and again, it's just not easy to do.
That's valid. From Technology Tell, Control 4 is expanding their wireless lighting control lineup. And Brock, we'll kick it off with you on this one. Is wireless in the home in general I know you're more pro, but let's take it into boardrooms. Is that even a good idea?
I'm 100% pro.
Oh, okay.
Know very little about the consumer market, and you know, have no idea if this will make people's lives better or not. I have some wireless dimming in my house, and it works just fine. I don't know if a new technology was required or not, but seems to be Control4's core market. And, you know, an adaptive phase dimmer, I think the problem that this product is attempting to solve is the introduction of LED lighting. Okay. Into the home. LED is very difficult to control with traditional dimmers, and so their wireless phase forward dimming system will do incandescent inductive loads and magnetic loads as well.
Very good. Stephen, is this something where you guys can? First of all, do you carry Control 4 before I ask you this question?
No, we don't. No, I'm the same. We're very commercial in our applications or in our sales, rather than home. All we're finding from a wireless standpoint, if it's wireless that we're talking about dimming and all that sort of good stuff, is that everybody wants to be wireless. They want to be able to do it off their iPad, their AMX system, their iPhone, their whatever the case may be. But no, Control 4, I do not know the product well at all.
Brad, you've been in the AV industry, a long time before you went to Infocom. The sense I get from people much smarter than I am that there's going to be a point here when we hit wireless. There, it's almost like wireless overload. Are we getting there yet, or is it? Are we still have some time before we saturate the wireless capabilities?
No, I don't think we've hit overload yet. I think we're still at the phase where we're trying to find out which wireless solutions work best. I think we're going to talk about some Wi-Fi solutions today. And, there are some situations where that stuff's good and there are situations where that stuff's not as good. Control 4 has come up as a residential equipment supplier. They did try to make inroads into commercial. They've shown up at Infocom, and they've done some large scale hotels and some of these other things. Wireless lighting products, have a couple of benefits. One of them is you don't have to wire them, for one thing. You don't have to pull wire to those dimmers necessarily, and then and it's good for retrofits. Wireless dimmers is good for retrofits, but like Brock mentioned, they've had lighting products in the past. Right now, all the lighting product manufacturers are trying to dim all the different kinds of lights that are coming out, and that's the biggest challenge. But wireless definitely has its place, and they've done it quite a bit. And we'll keep working with technologies until we find some that are that work great.
Tim, is wireless a situation where we have a security, where the overload could come, where there's a security issue for government type installations and stuff like that? Is that a challenge for the wireless people out there that people are seeing?
Well, that's one of them, right? The fact that you have a number of different frequencies that people are running on, right? And you don't really know, unless you have some sort of spectrum analyzer, what each device is. There are a couple of different ways to do that. You have everything from wireless mics to the Wi-Fi and also cellular systems, and now you've got wireless video. It depends on your take on wireless video, as well as wireless, now lighting and control. So I don't know. All right. From Bloomberg Business Week, smart TV sales does not mean smart TV use. basically, and
or smart TV users.
Well, smart users. How about that? You could have substituted smart TV with 3D with almost anything else in the last 10 years when it first came out. Right. The fact that you've got the latest trend, the last few years was you had 3D, and it was embedded, and it was there, and it was yay, we have 3D. But nobody was using it because nobody had the content and this, that, and the other. Brad, first of all, are you even surprised at this? And should this even maybe have been a headline, like no big deal?
No, the article, if you read all the way through it, it says, it puts it right out there. I'm not surprised by this at all. And, we're not the first industry to to go through this kind of thing. The same thing happened in the IT industry when graphics controller makers put 3D in everything. You know, every chip had 3D, and so 3D was suddenly the hottest thing. Well, no one was using it. It was just built into the chips. I mean, we're all digital now. We should have a better idea of attach rates and who's using these things by now. Of course, that's could have privacy ramifications, but no, it doesn't surprise me at all. I'm not even sure if I have a smart TV. I certainly don't use it that way. And there are times I would argue it's not smart enough for me. No, this doesn't surprise me at all. It's really, you know, TV manufacturers are looking for solutions to, you know, they're very much in the IT frame of mind. You know, you bought your TV. How many years from now do we want you to replace that? I mean, my tube TV lasted me 20 years. I'm already thinking about whether I need to replace my flat screen TV that I bought 2 years ago. But what's going to be the thing that makes me do it? And so far, I wouldn't say 3D makes me do it. And I'm not sure the smart TVs make me do it.
That's a good point. Joe, are you surprised that the people aren't even using the smart part of their smart TVs?
No, not really. I think the big significance of the smart TV is it's probably a bit more of a marketing move than a user demand. Their TV manufacturers, I think, were responding to the fact that PCs were starting to look more and more like TVs. And so they responded by making TVs look more and more like the PC to try to, you know, protect their turf a little bit and to make it a two-way experience, which is, you know, when you take a look at Google's efforts and it with YouTube, their big counter to conventional TV is that they're two-way, right? That they're an engagement experience, not just a passive experience. And this is television manufacturers' efforts to get in on that game. And I agree with what Brad said. You know, you throw stuff in there in an effort to try to add value when the product has been commoditized, as TVs have been these days. And sometimes you hit it, sometimes you don't. But if it costs you little, you just keep putting it in.
And that makes sense, you know. And kind of like Brad said, you know, depending on what makes you buy your next display. So,
yeah.
Steven, when it comes to not just, you know, these smart TVs, but other devices that help us interact with, the IP area of video, is this something where people are just used to there being maybe a set-top box and they're not used to the stuff being all embedded?
Well, I'll just quickly jump back to the overload thing that you mentioned before. If there's an overload situation going on, I would say it's on TVs and smartphones and all that other good stuff. Yeah. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I probably use 25% of my smartphone's capabilities and all the things that it can do. It takes my 23-year-old son to show me half the stuff on there. The TVs, you know, when Joe was saying, you know, he's thinking about changing his TV, I'm the same. I've got two great flat screen TVs in my home. And just because I saw one with a thinner bezel and it looked like a picture on the wall, I thought, oh, I should change to that TV. I don't know if it was the fact that it had a few more gadgets in it, you know, that I could operate and do. We're finding that most of the people in the boardrooms and so forth, when it comes to either their TVs, their projectors, or whatever the case may be, they just want to have an interaction with their iPad and their PC or their laptop and whatever they're trying to show for their presentation on that device. And maybe even trying to get them to switch modes if you have the software loaded down on the iPad, for example, for your projector, they find it difficult to be trained on that. So I just think there's an overload of this stuff going on, and it's just a new way to get people to buy more TVs, get them to switch out earlier, and just, you know, keep selling more TVs and things like that.
Sell more TVs.
Sell more TVs. Yeah, they need to keep the factories open. They really do.
Well, they do, yeah. From the AV Network, avnetwork.com, this is a story, actually two different ways. First of all, it talks about upgrading existing systems, but also more so about video over IP and video over twisted paired. Joe, you guys, AMX, has a number of different products, and now just kind of like almost like Control, over the last few years, you have a number of other companies that this is what they're doing. This is what they're focusing on. Whether it's the company in this story, which is SVSI, or, you know, Aurora or other companies like that. I believe even Kramer has some twisted pair ones. Are these ancillary companies, now that you guys and Crestron and even Extron to some extent have kind of got the game locked down and you're successful at doing from point A to point B, are these guys coming in? Are they a threat to you and your Twisted Pair system?
We never take competition for granted. So everybody's a risk for us. We're always paranoid about everybody. But we're also huge believers that network-based AV is the next major transition that AV is going to take. So, we never would want to bind ourselves to a technology and define ourselves by the technology. We just keep asking what our users trying to do and what's the best technologies we can leverage to get them there. And I really think that a huge opportunity is in network AV. So there will be new companies who come from a network background, and they're going to bring some new ideas and new capabilities to the parties. And AMX is going to have some perspectives that they don't have coming from our point of view. And new battles are going to be fought. And we're like I say, we don't take it for granted. We're never sitting here comfortable in our position.
I like the paranoid line, by the way.
That's Andy Gross, isn't it? Only the paranoid survive.
Well, yeah, that is true. That is true. Brad, you've got a unique perspective. You're the industry trade organization. Is Joe right? This is where we're going when it comes to video.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure Brock's been out there on projects and integrating stuff that's very network based. Everything's going over the network. It's just a matter of time before everyone gets it all pulled in and we get rid of all the analog, the old ways of connecting systems. And what it means is that a lot of people in our industry need to bone up on what all the significance of network systems and network protocols and how it all works and how one speaks to the other. InfoComm's starting to offer more and more networking courses. Some of them to people who've already taken, who've already gotten their Network Plus certification. Some of it stuff they already know, but we can't take for granted that everybody in the AV industry already knows the basics of networking. But we firmly believe that everyone needs to now and needs to be able to route audio, be able to route video, and everything else over the network, secure the network, and really think like an IT person. They're still different. The AV person still is in charge of the experience. They're in charge of the room. But they do have to know more and more about networking, and they need to work with IT staffs on these things.
Brock, my first manufacturer's training class, there was a gentleman in there that it shocked me based on what Brad said. He had all of these lists of Cisco certifications, and he worked for an AV company. Not only is this where we're going, but are these guys, God love Joe, they're paranoid over in Texas. Are they, that's who they're gunning for, though, is AMX and Crestron?
Well, the potential is here for a real quantum shift in how our industry works. The key differentiator with a product like SVSI, and there are some other ones out there, is the fact that the switch, Crestron and AMX offer encoders and decoders to send high-resolution video and audio over twisted pair and over fiber. Well, SVSI does that as well, except Crestron and AMX make their living on the switch that's in between those twisted pair or fiber encoders. SVSI doesn't. That switch is going to be manufactured by Cisco or one of Cisco's competitors. And this has now become a day-to-day topic of conversation in our engineering offices, because our design engineers are looking at the IP encode decode solution with a switch that can be it's infinitely scalable. It's not in 8x8 or 16x16 or 32x32 configurations. If you want to have a 1x96, which an SVSI project in Toronto here has, you just add more switching to it. And I think that that there are elements of the audiovisual, the traditional AMX, Crestron, Extron, Kramer audiovisual industry that may be at risk now that the initial problem that they were attempting to solve with higher end twisted pair solutions, the ability to combine VGA and HDMI over the same wire to accommodate whatever laptop a client happened to bring into a room, that problem is over. It's done. That's old news. We're at 90% digital video now. So what is the most cost effective way to route and switch digital video in a multi-room facility? And I'm real interested in finding out, whether this is actually on AMX's radar, or they think it's going to go away.
No, we do not think it's going away. In fact, I wanted to respond because you bring up a couple of really good points. It's interesting to hear you describe Crestron and AMX, and more importantly to me, as somebody who's worried about the twisted pair problem and how to solve this point-to-point solution, which is certainly true historically because that was the problem to be solved for the customers. But what my challenge as the marketing head is here at AMX is to really make sure people don't slot us into a company that delivers a piece of technology, but that we're really helping make sure that they understand that we're committed to the customer's end problem. And that problem still exists. People are in conference room solutions. People are using more and more media than ever. They're looking for convenient ways to share that media, provide collaboration experiences, interact with the space in which the media is being presented. All of those problems are still the same, just the technologies are moving on. And AMX is moving on with the technologies because we're following the need. We're not staying to the technology. So we formed a network media group about 2 years ago expressly to take advantage of the new technology so that AMX was not mired in a technological history. So obviously I haven't done a good enough job if that's still not on people's radar, but that's my challenge. And we are committed to staying with the customer's view of the world, not a technological history.
I like that term too, technological history. So. Mm-hmm. Stephen, is this, we've already talked about, whether it's AMX or Crestron or whoever, this is kind of where we're going when it comes to, the future of AV and even what Joe alluded to, and actually one of our next stories is, people are bringing in video from various places. And so the ability to network video and send it to various places is important.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more, and there's certainly nothing I can add to what the gentlemen have all talked about here. In fact, while you were talking, I was on Infocom site looking up a course that I could send my IT people to to bone up on it, because I think there is a lot of learning we need to do about it, because, Cisco are certainly making a lot of inroads in the industry, as we all know. So, yes, not a lot more I can add to what's already been said.
Brad, is there an Infocom course that he can send his guys to at Infocom this year? We were talking about, CTSI the other day. Send them to the CTSI class.
Well, for AV professionals or network professionals, I mean, we've started to offer the first network/IT course that Infocom offered was networked AV systems, which was sort of an intermediate course and presumed a network plus type level of understanding of networking, and really got into applications, streaming media, remote monitoring, applications that married AV and IT. And then we've backfilled. We have some introductory networking courses that we'll launch at the show. And the show also has certain courses that are more for IT people who want to understand AV and how it impacts their network and things like that. So it's been a multi-year initiative at Infocom to try to bridge these two things because, we've looked at it all, and our volunteers who direct our courses, they've looked at it all and they've decided, this is the future. And if each of us doesn't know what the other side is doing and understand how their technology works, it's going to be costly for customers.
And I will say this, Tim, in visiting customers like I do, and I often go out on the road and visit customers, more and more customers are telling me that they go to a corporation or a customer of theirs, and the IT person's in the meeting more and more these days.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that they're trying to mesh everything together through the network.
And I will say this, as a technology manager, I volunteer on the Technology Managers Council for Infocom. And one of the surveys that we take as part of our council every year is, what department are you in, right? And every year there's a more and more percentage of my cohorts who are underneath the IT, whether it's the guys from UCLA or Johns Hopkins or Notre Dame or even George Mason, Matt Silverman. More and more of these guys are going underneath the department of the IT department. So,
Tim, I think that ship has actually left the dock a long time ago. IT, if there ever was a battle between IT and AV, IT wins.
Yes.
And more often than not, with our corporate customers, my client is the IT manager, IT director, chief technical officer. And there are good things about that. As a community, IT managers want other people to take care of everything. So it's much easier to sell them service plans, monitoring programs, ongoing maintenance. IT automatically gets the understands the necessity of upgrading systems on an ongoing basis, whereas facility managers that we used to work for, they would look at an AV system a bit like a toilet. You install it once and it flushes over and over for 20 years. Whereas, the way that technology is advancing, 4, 5, 6 years is a long time to get out of an AV system now. Just as it is out of a computer, Joe, you may want to ask. You may want to ask for a new one after 6 years.
When it's not broken, I don't change it. But Stephen, you bring up some really good points that I kind of wanted to talk to, is that, as it's moved to the IT thing, IT space, it's not just because the technology's moved over there or for whatever reason it's moved in the IT space. One of the most important implications are that community just thinks differently about AV for all the ways you're describing. Mm-hmm. And, manufacturers like us need to start being much, much more sensitive to their priorities. And, I know a couple of weeks ago there was this dust up on switching performance times between some of the manufacturers. And
great video, by the way.
Thank you. But the video was humorous, but it was really trying to make a point that for a lot of these new users, that's not what turns them on. And they care more about some of the things that Stephen was talking about how can I make sure this is going to work reliably year after year? How do I make it somebody else's problem, not my own? It doesn't have to be the nth degree of performance. It just needs to get the job done for everybody. So, for us to serve our new customer base effectively, we need to really understand the way they think about our technology. And really, I should say, about the solution that we offer.
Well, it is also, though, they need to think about technology in general that way, too. I mean, this is, somebody said this to me at Infocom last year, we are no longer in the AV industry. We are in the technology industry. And, right. It was like a slap in the face. I'm like, oh, you're right, though. I mean, that's regardless of what it is that we interact with, we're interacting with technology more and more every day. I mean, whether it's AMX or Crestron or whoever control system, everybody's going to IP control. You're doing 232 and the dreaded IR, but everybody and their brother has some sort of IP in the back, and you can talk to it over some sort of IP control. And this is all just technology. This is stuff that people live with every day.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you guys. I'm act like I'm wrapping up. You're listening to AV Week. That gentleman right there is Joe Andrulis from AMX. Stephen McKay is here from IAVI. Brock McGinnis from Westbury National Show Systems, and Brad Grimes from Infocom. Real quick, guys, from the world of Wired.com, the Intel Media Box. The Intel Media Box could be the gateway to 4K. And I said it twice because anytime Intel is on the front, if my urban legends, I have my urban legends right, I think they're the ones who came up with the dreaded HDMI cable. So I have a bad feeling in my mouth when it comes to Intel. But they've got this media box, and it, according to Wired at least, it could be the gateway that gets 4K at least into the homes a lot quicker maybe than, I don't know, the traditional, you know, we talked about 3D not exactly going over well in homes. Brad, could this possibly be, you know, a gateway device for 4K?
Well, at this stage, anything could be. You know, there's really one or two viable 4K players or media devices out there. So, you know, if we're looking for something to get 4K into the home or anywhere else for that matter, the field's wide open. Now, this we were talking earlier about what would make you upgrade your TV. 4K might. I mean, I sort of see 4K as the next, you know, technology refresh in a lot of what we do. I'm not sure that I'd get it in my home. I don't know, because you need a pretty big TV to really get anything out of all those pixels. But in a lot of pro applications where you know, very fine pixel density can have, you know, visualization applications, medical applications, control room monitoring applications where, you know, some of these control room installations are already using 4K projection for really fine walls and things like that. I'm sort of excited about 4K. It's got a lot of challenges. It's going to take a little time. You've got some TVs out there. You don't have a lot of devices that can pump 4K to those TVs, and frankly, don't have a lot of 4K content either. But you know, Intel's really just trying to get into the media box business. They're just trying to expand. And if their media box supports 4K, then, you know, that's good for them. And certainly it could help.
Brock, you are 100% pro. However, when it comes to 4K, it's one of these signals and technologies that you, at least in my opinion, you're going to have to worry about sooner rather than later. Where are you when it comes to 4K? Are you bullish or are you bearish?
We can't wait.
Yeah, good.
The ability to offer a client something better, potentially something more expensive, potentially something more profitable, and most importantly for us, something for which they need our expertise, you know, that they can't just go to Best Buy and, or another big box retailer. Sorry about that. I suppose I shouldn't be brand specific.
Oh, there's only one. There's only one big box left. So.
Okay, you know, one of the greatest things about being an audiovisual integrator over the last 5 years is that people really needed us again. The whole HDCP, HDMI, EDID. You plugged your laptop in, it didn't work anymore. That's great for the audiovisual business, because in the end, you know, all of this hardware, you know, it's introduced, it's expensive, it's profitable, and then there's a race for the bottom on pricing. Things become commoditized. IT managers decide they can, you know, buy it themselves, and they'll buy it through an IT channel. Or directly from a distributor at a 2 or 3 or 4% margin that we can't compete with. So any new technology that offers real, measurable, visual advantage is fabulous. And the way that we're looking at it, you know, we have a hard time convincing corporations to put 1080p projectors or WUXGA projectors in their boardrooms. They say, well, WXGA is just fine. And even though we've all got 1080p at home and all those flat panels are 1080p and HD has kind of become the visual standard, getting them to spend the extra money in their boardrooms has been difficult. Now, with 4K options, we can present 1080p the same way that Wendy's Hamburgers presents their double. if you don't want to buy the 4K, Mr. CEO, surely you can afford the 1080p. So we think it's positive. In terms of Intel themselves, Intel are in the chip business. I think they're just out shaking the tree so that other manufacturers recognize that they make a 4K supporting video processing chip. Mm-hmm. And come and get it, boys, because if you don't make set-top boxes with 4K capability, we'll make our own. And I suspect this Intel Media Box will go away as everybody else who's already in the business, already has the distribution channels and the relationships with the service providers, as they all start upgrading their set-top boxes with Haswell processors.
Mm, that's very, very smart. I didn't even think about that. Stephen, where are you when it comes to 4K or even the Intel box here?
Well, just bullish about 4K. Without customers like Brock, you know, we don't exist. So I totally agree with him that any new technology that brings requires the integrator to be involved with the customer is great. It offers us more margins as it offers the integrator more margins as they bring in this product. I was talking to LG yesterday. They were in the office and they were telling us about their 4K, I think it's 75-inch or 80-inch or 85-inch, I'm not sure. It's quite a big one, but you know, to Brad's point, you need a lot of pixels. And we can't wait because, you know, that unit, as you can imagine, is going to sell for, you know, pretty high dollar. And, you know, there's margin built in for everybody. Because I can tell you on a sales aspect, consumer obviously outstrips commercial, you know, by far. And a lot of customers seem to be okay with the fact that they can just put a consumer, you know, panel in their boardroom or setup. Something like this, new technology, and it's coming through on a commercial basis. We just can't wait. We anticipate it. Been looking forward to it, and we'll ride that wave.
Stephen, why do you think that is? The fact that people are okay with just putting in a regular old, I can walk down to Best Buy and put up any old flat screen in my boardroom, as opposed to a professional
pricing. Pricing. It just comes down to pricing. If you look at, you know, one manufacturer has their 70, 80, and 90-inch consumer panel, and they have their commercial, and we sell for probably 10 times consumer over commercial because of price. They're okay with it. And then some of the manufacturers are also offering extended warranties that you can go on. And if you know, in the old days, if you had a consumer in your boardroom, that they wouldn't come and fix it. These days you can go online and you can get an extended warranty on it and everyone's okay with it. We hate it. You know, we don't like it. We anything that can buck that trend, we talk to the manufacturers about, and you know, if 4K helps buck that trend for a while, then I'm all for it.
No, Joe, you guys have got a number of Twisted Pair and other solutions as well for HD video, and is this something that you have already have your engineers on as 4K?
Absolutely. I mean, it hasn't surprised us on the scene at all, and. I would agree with Stephen that it's not the type of thing that you see a lot of pull demand coming from the commercial sector in particular. I do think his perspective is pretty interesting, though. It does help sell the current high end by making the high end the middle ground now. So it's the medium solution. So it probably will drive existing sales more. But, you know, time marches on, capabilities march on. Even if people don't need 4K, once it becomes available enough, they'll expect it. Right, it'll just be one of the requirements, and we'll be expected to support it.
Yeah, I'm personally very, very, very bullish on. I talked to a really smart person from the Consumer Electronics Association back in January or December, and they equated the rise in 4K to the rise of OLED, like one would help the other and vice versa. So, and I'm really excited about OLED. So.
Do you not think the consumer market is going to be suspicious of a new technology?
No. I mean, we're pretty gullible when it comes to stuff. Don't you think? I mean, it took forever. Not forever, but it took an awful long time for the HD to finally catch on, right? They were selling HD, technically, you know, 720. for a while before, you know, the digital transition in the U.S. at least, and this, that, and the other. And now that it's taken hold, I don't know.
What do you think? Suspicious because they're going to be forced into buying 4K.
No, I'm not. I wasn't questioning the 4K. I was questioning the OLED.
OLED, yeah.
The 4K is, you know, whether it's in an LED backlit LCD or a plasma or a projector, those form factors and technologies they already kind of understand. This OLED thing is new and scary. And what if it ends up like Beta?
They don't remember Beta
or Sony. Sorry.
They don't remember Beta. They barely remember HD DVD. Does anybody here remember HD DVD?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I don't know. I mean, I guess because I'm too incredibly close to the industry, I guess, because I've been hearing about OLEDs for 10 years. And all the cool things they can do and the color depth and this, that, and the other. And every year they just keep getting closer and closer and also farther away, it seems. So.
Well, that's what 4K is going to do. It's just going to put that off. I mean, with that, I mean, you can get really good color depth with that many pixels. I mean,
yeah.
It looks, you know, not to be, you know, I think it's great. I think it's great for the industry. It's a great opportunity to upgrade everybody. But, you know, it does also look great. I mean, it looks really good. I mean, consumers who see it are gonna like the way it looks, and then they'll have to make a decision. And like I said, I think it has a lot of good application in pro where people just need more pixels. So, you know, consumers have been smart in certain areas. They took a pass on 3D. They've apparently bought a lot of smart TVs, even if they're not looking at them that way. And they'll decide if they want to go out and snap up some 4K. I'm really excited for it, too, though.
See, and I think that you put even 4K plasma, right, up against a 4K OLED, mm-hmm. I think anybody with half a sense, unless it's like $20,000 more, would pick the OLED over the plasma, just because, you know, even with, you know, the same signal, right, the same amount of pixels, at least from what I've seen, you know, the OLED would just
plasma. Plasma people don't believe, people can't remember plasma.
Okay, LCD then. I mean, I was trying to give it an emissive
Tim,
technology.
I respectfully disagree.
Really,
I don't think the consumer can tell the difference between a good picture and not a good picture. People buy televisions at Costco with brand names on them they have never heard before and will never hear again. And, you know, these are otherwise rational, intelligent, thinking people. And they go, oh, my God, I can get a 1080p TV for $565. What a great deal. They don't even look at the picture. They will walk into one of those big box stores. They will look at five pictures and they will choose the cheapest one or the second cheapest one rather than the best one. And it happens over and over and over again. Consumer behavior is very odd sometimes. And I think that there will always be folks, you know, either who have more money than brains that will buy the latest and greatest and largest and best technology. And there are those who have really discriminating tastes and really care and then bore their friends for hours talking about how spectacular their new OLED TV is. For Ma and Pa, who bought their DVD player at the end of the aisle at their local supermarket, this isn't going to be a big deal. You know, 3D didn't save the TV industry. 4K isn't going to save the TV industry. OLED isn't going to save the TV industry. Size is what people are buying. Bigger TVs, way bigger TVs within an affordable price range. And we see the same thing in corporate.
Yeah, corporate especially, because we're seeing, again, visiting the customers, more and more integrators, and Brock, you can probably speak to this, you know, as well, that in a boardroom that can handle 20 people, why would you put a projector now with a lamp in there? Why wouldn't you put an 80 or 90 inch, you know, panel?
Which is exactly what we do. And when we give a client the option of choosing a consumer model or a or a commercial model from that same manufacturer who makes 70s and 80s and 90s, 9 out of 10 times they choose the commercial one, or the consumer one rather, unless they want the touch screen.
I agree with Brock and Stephen on that, and I wonder partly if it's not so much they don't, customers don't care about quality, it's just that the low end of the market, the quality at the low end of the market, has really gotten to the point that it's really quite serviceable in almost all applications, even in TV viewing. And admittedly, if you put them right next to each other, they would say the OLED or other technologies or 4K would be a better picture. But when you take it out and it's just in your TV and it's or your living room and it's all by itself, and even more so in your conference room where you're just trying to get a job done, if you can see the person and you can hear the person and the picture looks good, you're getting the job done, and price matters then.
Go ahead, Brad.
I was just wondering if size is critical right now. I just have a feeling, and I have to admit I haven't seen it side by side, but at 80 plus inches, 4K next to 1080p, I think people will see a difference. And they may, you know, at that point, maybe quality and maybe the density of the pixels will win them over to 4K. Now, it won't, not right away, not when it costs a bazillion dollars to have an 80-inch 4K panel. But over time, you know, maybe that's where it goes.
I show clients on a regular basis, Brad, an 85-inch 1080p plasma display and an 80-inch low-cost LCD LED. Display, LED backlit LCD display, 1080p. I show them side by side. One of them is $39.95. one of them is four, five, six times that amount, and the difference in picture quality is stunning. You know, a Panasonic 85-inch plasma produces an outstanding picture, and the other picture's okay. For the money, 100% of the time now, the clients choose the $39.95 80-inch display.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And now Brock has dashed my dreams of OLED, so I'm gonna go home and cry now. Hope you're happy.
You will have your OLED, Tim.
When I'm dead, maybe. My grandkids will have it.
No, the key is to get yourself positioned so that you can get it as a spiff from a manufacturer.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Perhaps by becoming a media superstar. Or
that again.
Or networking so well, like this.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. Although there was, what was it, the 15, we go back to Brock's point about the cost. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about a company that has a $1,500 4K display already. So, and it's a company I've never heard of. It's SEIKI. I don't even know how to pronounce it. So, Sakai, Saki. So yeah, they've already got a $1,500 4K. It was 50 or
what,
60
what size?
Inches.
What size?
50 or 60 inches.
Get out of town.
Yeah, yeah. But again, see that back to that proves Brock's point. So. All right, guys, that's going to do us for this week. Real quickly, I wanted to highlight something that's going on just in the industry in general. Women in AV, our buddy Jennifer Willard and a couple other people, Kelly Perkins helps out with that as well. They've got something going on called the 2013 Women in AV Mentor Award. If you go to womeninav.com, we'll put a link directly to this as well. If you know a woman in the AV industry who has mentored others, please go there and nominate them. There's a group of women in AV who will go through the nominations and give the awards out. I think they're doing the awards actually at Infocom this year. But if you would just be so kind as to go nominate a woman in AV that you know and appreciate and who has mentored other women as well. The deadline for that is Friday, May 17th. March 17th would be a bit late. So,
women in AV are doing absolutely fantastic work in the industry.
Yeah.
Attempting to raise the level of involvement and profile, and I think ownership sense. Anything that we can do to support them is uh, a is well worth our time and effort.
Hear, hear.
Absolutely agree. So, all right, guys, thank you so much. Stephen McKay is here from IAVI. He is the Vice President of Sales. Thank you, sir.
Thank you again, Tim.
How can people reach you, get a hold of you?
www.iavi.com. Go online there, and you'll find all the ways of reaching us.
All right. Mr. Joe Andrulis, the Vice President of Global Marketing for AMX. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Enjoyed being here.
And how can people either get a hold of you or AMX?
Just go to amx.com, and there will be a variety of contact options for you.
Okay. Also is Brock McInnes, the sales manager for Westbury National Show Systems. Thank you, sir.
Glad to be here, Tim. Always a pleasure. We are at westbury.com, and I can also be found on Twitter. My handle is at Brock McInnes. Spell it however you like. I hope to come back and do this again sometime. Always a lot of fun.
Thank you. And also, last but not least, Brad Grimes, the senior editor and writer for Infocom. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tim.
And how can
look people... Look forward to seeing your show next month, too.
Yes.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
It'll be fantastic.
How can people either get a hold of you or also Infocom as well?
Obviously, we're at infocom.org. That's where all the resources are, links to the show and all the exhibits and the classes. And I also tweet under Grimes Pro AV.
Grimes Pro AV. So, and he also writes a very nice blog on All Voices, too. So, thank you guys for joining us. If you'd like, don't follow me. Go to the website, avnation.tv, avnation.tv. That's the website for this show, as well as a number of others. We have an education show. We do one on control systems, actually, Joe. We have the DIY and some others. So check that out, if you would, please. avnation.tv, avnation.tv. That's all the time we have for AV Week.